Hi there, and welcome to the 6th Annual Transforming Toddlerhood Conference. I'm so happy you're here with us today. I'm your host, Devin Kuntzman, toddler expert and founder of Transforming Toddlerhood. I'm on a mission to dispel the myth that toddlerhood is terrible and empower parents and caregivers to overcome the challenges of toddlerhood, nurture their little one's development, and create confidence in their parenting skills. And that's exactly what we're here to do today. And I am so excited to be here with Tasha Shore, founder of Parenting Boys Peacefully. Welcome, Tasha.
Thank you so much for inviting me on.
Thank you so much for being here. I'm so excited to talk to you all things about raising boys. But before we jump into that, there might be some people watching who have never met you and don't know about your work. So could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Absolutely. So my mission at Parenting Boys Peacefully is to create a more peaceful world, one sweet boy at a time. And I do that by working with parents to build their confidence and use connection-based parenting tools to transform challenging behaviors, most specifically aggression.
Awesome. I love that. And when, as we think about parenting boys, and I want to start off by talking about, what do you feel are some of the common myths or misconceptions that we have about raising boys?
That's an interesting question. I think one is that we have a misconception that they're not as sensitive as our girls. And that is not true. I'm not a big, like, you know, pull out my study person, but I was reading a book recently that was quoting a study proving that fact. Boys are super sensitive, and we don't create space to allow them that sensitivity. So I think that that's one of the huge myths. And then another, maybe even more problematic, huge myth about parenting boys is that the problem is actually with them and not with the environment. So when we're talking about a girl, like when there's a little girl who's struggling, often we go to, well, what's going on in her life? Is there, you know, is somebody treating her poorly? Is there something going on at school? But when a boy is struggling, even in a very similar way, most of our tendencies are to go straight to what's wrong with him. And then we sort of go down this slippery slope into a million kinds of, you know, therapies and treatments and diagnoses. And I'm not saying there's not a place for that, though sometimes there's absolutely a place for that. But I think we go there way too soon.
Very interesting. And what do you feel is at the root of this? And does society play a role in this?
At the root of it, I think, is our fear of boys and men and their big feelings, including but not limited to aggression, right? So we're swamped in the news with all sorts of negative images of men, right? So we've got rapists, and we've got murderers, and we've got terrorists, and we've got politicians, and we've got all sorts of people who we label as bad as a society, and parents who come to me with, like, 3-year-olds, 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds who are, you know, hitting them when they have a disappointment, right? You know, the spaghetti has sauce on it and they didn't want it, and they have a huge tantrum, right? And start kicking and hitting. And these parents are terrified. They come to me and they're literally terrified that their boy is going to grow up and be a school shooter. Their boy is going to grow up and, you know, treat women horribly. I mean, these are, like, I hear these fears daily. I mean, this isn't just, like, one parent once said to me. Like, this is what most parents who come to me say to me. They have this huge future worry about what their boy is going to grow into as a result of some sort of in-the-moment behavior that they're seeing. They're scared. So it's that fear, I think, that gets in our way from really thinking well about how to help them.
Yeah, and as a result, from this fear and from this idea that, you know, boys aren't as sensitive, and the fear that is perpetuated here, what traps do you feel that parents and caregivers maybe accidentally get stuck in when it comes to raising boys?
I think the biggest fear is we get stuck into attempting to parent with control. And so using traditional behaviorist models of punishment, you know, sending our boy on time out until he feels better, right? You know, come back when you can control yourself, kind of a thing. Also, even less harsh means, right? So just quieting his feelings. In other words, not creating a safe space or even allowing space for him to show, like in the example about the pasta, his disappointment, his upset, right? I'm not saying the behavior is okay. It's not okay to kick me. It's not okay to hit me, but it's absolutely okay to feel the disappointment or the anger or whatever feeling comes up for him as a result of not getting what he wants. That is a normal feeling. And we need to help him learn how to ride the wave of that feeling. And as he grows and matures, to help him transform his behaviors from you know, these more reactionary behaviors to more pro-social ways of expressing, you know, whatever the exact feeling is. But that takes time. I think we fall into this trap as parents of wanting to have a quick fix. And there is no quick fix. If anybody tells any of you that there's a quick fix, there is not. There is no magic to it. There's not one thing you can say or do. Parenting is a practice. It's a practice of building strong connections with your kids and building your confidence so that when life throws curveballs, you have the confidence to be able to pull out the tools that you have in your peaceful parenting toolbox and get creative about experimenting with using them.
Yeah. Thank you so much for bringing up this idea of a quick fix because, you know, we're as humans, you know, it's hard. Like we are programmed to want this instant gratification and we live in a society that, you know, continually rewards that instant gratification. And now, you know, we have Amazon Prime, and Prime used to be 2 day. And sometimes it's like 1 day, sometimes it's like 3 hours from now. And, you know, just that even as an example, like we're so primed for this instant gratification. And so it can be challenging to really shift out of this idea that there must be a way to fix this. And I think that when we are enrolled in this idea of a quick fix, this is where we try to use these conventional parenting tools that are based in control and fear. And depending on your child's temperament, it might look like in some moments, oh, that was a quick fix in terms of stopping the behavior. However, we're not addressing the feelings and emotions, and long term, it's not actually propelling us forward in a way to a place that we want to go.
Right. I mean, it's really creating a huge rift in our relationship with our child. So when we're in the moment with a toddler, right, you're working with parents of toddlers, we're going like, how do I get him to stop hitting his sister, right? How do I get him to stop spitting at me, like whatever the things are. But we need to be thinking not just about that moment, but how do we want to address that such that when this little guy is a teenager, he comes to me when things are hard? We need to think about our relationship as a lifetime relationship, which is hard to do in the moment, especially when you have a toddler and you're perhaps still sleep deprived, right? We were talking about that before we got on the call, trying to juggle work, you know, paid work and parenting work and all of that. It is hard. But in my experience, and, you know, I've got three boys who are now, how old are they? 16, 18, 20. they're big, right? And we had all these huge struggles when they were little, but, you know, my experience with them and then with working, which is with the thousands of parents that I've worked with, is that if you invest the time and the energy in using tools of connection to transform behaviors when they're small, that pays off in dividends when they're teens. I mean, I remember once when one of my kids was in high school and was saying to me, I think I'm the only kid who doesn't lie to his parents. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, well, that's interesting, you know, and then thinking about that, why is that? You know, not because I'm some super parent, but I do think it's because I made it very clear from very early, hey, I can handle you. You can come to me with anything. even things that other people might find scary, offensive, challenging to deal with. Like I'm committed to doing my emotional work so that I can be there for you even when things are hard. And what that did is create a space for, you know, my teens to be able to come to me and say, you know, there was porn at this person's house, or, you know, my girlfriend is cutting, she's cutting herself. What do I do? I mean, these are like real things that happen. And we want our kids to be open and communicative with us. And the way we do that is by building a solid foundation of connection when they're young. So with our boys, like, we need to realize that there's a difference between them and their behaviors. Like, one of the things that I like to tell all parents that I work with is like, hey, you know, if you can imagine sort of like, here's your sweet boy, do-do-do-do-do, he's here. And then there's all these like yucky behaviors that are kind of glommed on top of the sweet boy, right? So it's like, he's hitting and he's spitting and he's scratching and he's biting and he's, you know, not sharing and he's not cooperating and he's, you know, not whatever, all the things. But the truth of the matter is that sweet boy never goes away. And rather than focusing on each of these individual behaviors and getting all freaked out about them and worried, like, if we can keep our eye on that sweet boy underneath, and each time he calls for help by expressing one of those behaviors, because I truly believe that each of them is a call for help, if we answer that with connection to that sweet boy underneath, we see that these behaviors kind of peel off. They peel away, they fall away. And we end up seeing more of that sweet boy more often. So this it's really important to stay focused on him rather than the behaviors. Your boy is not his behaviors, even in the worst of moments.
Yeah, this is such a great reminder. I'm so glad you're saying this, that, you know, there's a difference between your boy and their behavior, and this idea that we can accept a child's feelings and emotions and at the same time not be condoning the behavior. And when we can start to create this mindset shift that the behaviors are a form of communication, they're a signal, they're a call for help, as you said, then our response is going to begin to transform, and we're going to create space for those feelings and emotions and be able to separate that from the behavior and start to see how a child's feelings and emotions are impacting their behavior, but they're not the same thing.
Absolutely. And even to take that one step further, and one thing that I work with parents on very seriously is teaching them how to become and maintain an advocate for their sweet boy despite his behaviors, right? So those of us who have boys or have had boys who have struggled, we need to remember that it's our job to continue to fight for them, to fight for life to go well for them. And that means standing up for them in school, in friendship relationships, you know, sometimes to friends' parents, in the medical system, in the psychological system. And we have to stand up for them and keep reminding, hey, he's good. I get the behaviors aren't okay. Let's work together to help him through. I agree. It is not okay, you know, that he yelled at the teacher, you know, or I'm moving ahead. So let's say you're in the toddlerhood years here, your audience, right? So let's say there's a preschool issue. I'm sure there are lots of those, right? And boys get kicked out of preschool at an alarming rate, by the way, and boys of color even at a higher, more alarming rate. Preschool, right? I mean, preschool. Let me just like a side thought here. It's like, what message are we sending our boys when the adults in their world are saying to them at 2 years old, at 3 years old, at 4 years old, we can't handle you. We can't handle you. That is terrifying. And when you've got a boy who's struggling, especially like with aggression, there's likely fear behind that aggression. That's probably what's driving it. And when he sees that the adults in his life are really scared, that then loops back and makes him more fearful and the behavior gets worse. So like, we really need to learn how to advocate for our boys, not for their behaviors, but for their right to get help in overcoming them. You know, so I started to say, like in a preschool, let's say a boy is, you know, grabbing toys all the time. He doesn't know how to share well or something like that. Rather than shaming him or, you know, putting him in a corner or taking time off from his time out of, you know, recess or whatever they call it in preschool, right? We need to use tools of connection. We need to move towards him. The teachers need to learn to move towards him. And we as parents, we need to be there to help both, you know, appreciate the teachers for their hard work that they do, right? For very little pay and for very little reward of any kind, truthfully, right? A really, really hard position. And stand up and say, hey, like, we've got to figure this out. I'm on your team, preschool teacher. I'm on your side. But we can't give up on my boy. Let's figure it out. What can we try? And we just have to try a series of experiments.
Yeah, I love this. And do you maybe have an example of how we can really advocate for a little boy and preserve this idea of nurturing their emotional development and still address a challenging aggressive behavior that might get them labeled as bad, you know, perhaps something like biting or kicking or something like this?
Yeah, well, I mean, I will say, like, in preschool, I think that we can start, I think, by not even necessarily addressing the challenging behavior in the moment. Like, we tend to focus there. And what I want to say is it's often much more productive and helps much more quickly, resolves the issues much more quickly, if we zoom out a little bit and focus on how can we build connections. So, like, in a preschool situation, that might be working with a teacher to brainstorm ideas for how to help that child feel seen and loved. So often a conversation that I will guide parents to have with a preschool teacher or even a higher level teacher is, hey, you know, I've noticed that my boy does better, like his behavior is much better when he feels like people like him. And obviously this is actually true of everybody in the world, right? We all do better when we feel like people like us, but whatever. So it doesn't matter. it's true for your boy too. So it's not a lie. So, you know, I'd say, hey, I've noticed this. And for some reason I'm thinking that he just doesn't, you know, I think he's not feeling like he's loved here or he's liked. And I know that's crazy because I know you care about him deeply. And I'm just wondering where that break is happening. And if there's something that we can think of to like help him get that you do like him, that you know, he is important to you. So phrasing it like that, like I said, like we're on the same side as the teacher. And little things like greetings when they get there, taking a moment to come over, get down to his level and welcome him into the classroom, for example, or eliminating what's not working. So if there are any sort of shaming or isolating punishments that have been used, eliminating those can make a big difference. There are lots of things that we can do, but I think it takes zooming out, like I said, and not necessarily focusing like, oh my God, you know, he's you know, he's not standing in line when I'm asking him to stand in line, or he's, you know, he's grabbing toys from other kids or whatever it is, like, and focusing like so much on that, like, quote unquote, bad behavior that we forget that there's a kid underneath. We need to focus on connecting with the kid rather than fixing the behavior. And then the behavior kind of fixes itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, connection is such a powerful tool. And when we remember, again, as you said, that kids are more than their behaviors. And so we connect with the kid, who they are, their emotions at their core. A lot of times then they'll see that we're on their team. And then we have now got back into a position of influence with a child because they see us as a teammate and not as an opposing force. And this is especially true in the toddler years when you have a toddler who is trying to become their own individual. And so where they're kind of predispositioned to push against us because they're just trying to figure out what it means to be me. And so it's just, connection is so, so important. And I love the example that you gave with the teacher, because It also can be really great example to use in co-parenting relationships too, with like grandparents, with a parenting partner, a nanny, something like this. It's a great way to approach a situation where a child's having a hard time in an environment or with an adult.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. I love that. So this idea, so we're really focusing on this idea of nurturing little boys' emotional intelligence and that development. And I'm curious, like, why should we even worry about this in the toddler years, especially with little boys? Why should we be concerned about their emotional development?
Oh, well, that just, we'll just loop back to the beginning of this conversation, right? Because just read the news, right? Or turn on the TV or scroll your internet news feed and look at what's going on in the world. I think we have a responsibility. The women's movement has been amazing in terms of transforming our role as women and creating opportunities for girls that they didn't used to have. And we've made huge shifts and women are doing so much better. Okay, we still have a long way to go, but we're doing so much better. But I truly feel like we've left half the population behind. We've left them behind. And we need to help our boys and grow into men who understand sort of how they fit into this new reality. And part of that new reality is having a level of emotional intelligence that maybe we didn't require of them in a way, in sort of an earlier traditional, let's just say, family model, right? So mothers are out, we're out working. I mean, you run a business, I run a business. I mean, I'm the main supporter of my family financially, right? Well, then what role does my partner have? What's his role now? Am I still supposed to be like full-time mom and full-time income earner? We haven't moved fathers, and obviously these we're talking about, you know, heterosexual families. I realize this is not what all families look like, but if we're looking at a mom dad family, like we need to help, we need to raise boys with the emotional intelligence to be able to step into that nurturing role of a parent in a way that we weren't asking them to do before. Because right now what's happening is like most women have taken on double duty. And a lot of men are floundering in terms of purpose and what their role is in the family. So we need to focus on our boys' emotional intelligence for that reason. And also just because, like I said before, like there's all of these horrible things that are happening, right? The rapes and the murders and all the things we talked about at the beginning, the school shootings. I mean, these are real things that are happening. And the parents, like I said, who are coming to me, they're fearful that their boy's going to be the next one. And the way that we make sure our boys aren't going to be the next one, and obviously their mental health issues, I mean, there are issues of poverty, there are all sorts of issues that can complicate things. We're not going to get into all of that here. But one of the biggest gifts we can give our family, our boy, our family, and our communities and the world, I mean, it really has a ripple effect, is creating safe space for our boys to have their full array of emotions, not just anger. Not just anger. We need to be comfortable and okay with them feeling disappointed, feeling sad, feeling heartbroken, feeling vulnerable. All the feelings that we traditionally would associate with the, you know, quote unquote feminine or girls. Like our boys have all these feelings too. We need to create safe space for them to have them and not be freaked out by it or not try to quiet it, not poo-poo it.
Yeah. And it's so important when we have to realize that as human beings, we all experience the full spectrum of emotions. And a lot of times there's a different expectation for girls versus boys in terms of what emotions are okay to experience. And so this idea, you know, that, well, we've heard it 1,000 times, like, oh, you need to toughen up, or boys don't cry, or things like this. And so when we start shifting away from these things to this idea of we can accept the full spectrum of human emotions in little boys and becoming, as the parent or caregiver, that safe space for a child to express those. This is where the transformation happens.
Right. And I think that's part of the problem is that we don't understand the power of the release of these emotions. Like, that's really, you know, you want the magic pill. That's the closest thing to a magic pill that I've seen, is when we create safe space for our little ones to release feelings, their behaviors actually shift. So, you know, once when one of my boys was little, he was playing soccer and he got cleated like in the neck. And he was crying and it hurt, obviously. If I were cleated in the neck, like, I would be crying too. But the way the coach responded is very different than he would have responded if it were a girl, right? Girls generally get like, you know, oh, you know, go, you know, have a seat, you know, go sit on the bench, you know, take a breather, come back when you're ready, kind of a thing. And, you know, he was threatened with, you know, if you don't kind of get it together and get back on the field right now, you're not playing the next game. That's not supportive of his emotions. Like, it is perfectly reasonable to be hurt. When we are hurt, we cry. It helps to actually heal the physical pain. We feel better after we cry. If that coach could have allowed him to simply release those feelings, he would have gotten on the field way more quickly than by trying to tamp them down. And one of, I think, the most harmful messages that we're sending our little ones from a very, very young age, from a toddler age, is like, we love you when you're good, right? When you're acting good, when things are going well. But we need to be sending the message that we're here for you when things are tough. So we do not want to be sending boys away and saying like, hey, I can't handle you right now. You know, go on a timeout. When you feel better, when you can stop hitting, you come back. That is not the message. Like, we want to be sending that message of like, you have to deal with these things on your own. You have to figure these out on your own. That is a dangerous message, both for our family and for our societies. So instead, we want to bring them into our fold, because the feelings don't go away, right? The feelings will just percolate. And if we don't create space for them to come out when they're little, they find other ways to come out, right? And you'll see kids, if we tamp them down, you'll see kids when they're really little, they'll start, you know, maybe sucking a thumb, or you'll see kids who have like soaking wet sleeves, or like their shirt, like they're sucking on their shirt. Or there are all sorts of sort of repetitive behaviors that kids will engage in when they're trying to tamp down uncomfortable feelings, because there's no way for them to come out. And as they grow, those ways of tamping down the feelings get more and more complicated, right? And harder to deal with. And you get into, you know, alcohol and drugs and porn. And like, this is sort of like we moving into the teen years or tween years. But I think we can really have a positive effect on that and really diminish the incidence of our boys kind of falling off the path that we would like to see them on if we create that space when they're younger.
Do you have some more examples of how we can create that space for boys to really express and release those emotions and to support them, especially in the toddler years?
Yeah. So setting limits, learning how to get really, really good at setting limits. If you've got a little boy who's struggling with aggression or other challenging behaviors, it's going to be really, really key. And setting limits, not like harshly, like many of us experienced, but setting limits really as a gift, like as a way to stop a behavior that's not working. So let's say you have a little one and he's hitting a sibling, you could move in lovingly and, remove him gently, like, you know, hold him back gently and say, hey, you know, hey, sweet boy, I can't let you hit your brother, or whatever it is. And what's going to happen is that he's going to fight back, right? He's going to have an upset, you know, leave me alone, I hate you, or just kicking or whatever it is. And if you can, in that moment, not try to fix him, but rather keep yourself safe, right? You might have to protect yourself, or you might have to block in front of the other, you know, the brother, so he doesn't get hit. But your tone of voice is loving. You're not getting confused by the behaviors, right? That sweet boy is still in there, even though he's kicking and all all those things. But so your job is to keep everyone safe. And, you know, I can't let you say something like, I can't let you hurt your brother, sweet boy. And I like to just have a term of endearment on there because it helps calm our own system, right? It's hard to be angry at someone when you're calling them your term of endearment for them, right? Because those feelings of frustration and anger and even hatred towards our kids come up. I mean, that it just does. So to be able to just say, you know, I can't let you hit your brother, sweet boy, and prevent that from happening physically in a gentle kind of a way, that's the space. He gets to yell. He gets to say whatever comes out of his mouth. We don't have to fix it. We don't have to change it. We just are letting, we're keeping everyone safe, and we're letting him know that he's loved all the way through. And what happens in this tool, and, you know, we write about in our book, Listen, is called Stay Listening. And if you stay listen all the way through an episode like this, it's amazing, like, the shift in personality, it feels like, that happens. You will see a child come out the other end who is just, you know, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and sparkly, and all of a sudden, you know, can play with his brother, can share the toy that, you know, started the fight in the first place. It's quite amazing how quickly that transformation happens when we don't try to fix something, but we create the space for that emotional release that is the closest to a magic pill that you'll find.
Yeah.
Is that the kind of example that you're looking for?
Absolutely. I mean, this is because it further underscores the fact that oftentimes there's less to do in the moment than we think there is. And what I heard you say is, like, this idea of we need to create physical safety, right? And we're going to create that physical safety by setting limits. And once that physical safety is established, everyone's physically safe. This is where I call it creating the emotional safety, where it's like, okay, it's a safe space to release those emotions and to do the stay listening tool and to let those emotions pour out. And oftentimes, like, when we're holding that space, there isn't so much doing happening there. It's more being present, being there. And it just, like, just underscores, like, how powerful connection is. And sometimes connection, once we've established that safety through the limits, there isn't so much to do actually, but more to be.
Yeah. One of the traps that I see parents fall into all the time is trying to figure out the why behind everything. You know, what happened? Why did he do this? Who started it? You know, all the things, that many of which we'll never know, right? Most of these things we can't prove through the answers to any of those questions. But the good news is that we can help resolve the conflicts and help improve the behaviors without really knowing the why. Now, sometimes, you know, like we talked about earlier in the call, you know, there is something external that needs to be addressed. So often we look at what's wrong with our boy rather than, is there something in the environment that we need to fix? Like, for example, with the teacher, can we help build a connection? So we want to focus there. We want to focus on the connection. And I lost my train of thought. Help me back.
Yeah, that we want to look at the environment, that it's not something to actually do or fix within the child, but there's this opportunity to look at the wider environment in terms of the doing piece of this.
Right. So getting stuck in the why is what I was talking about. It's like this trap that parents fall into, is like they'll get so hung up on why is he doing this? Why is this happening? And instead of spending the time doing that, we can be using so many tools and of connection to actually improve the behavior. And we may or may not ever know what the why is, right? And sometimes there are, like I started to say, sometimes there are things in the environment that we need to address. And obviously if there's, you know, if you feel like your child is in danger or something negative is happening that needs to be looked at, then obviously you go there. But if most of us have already done that, right? And we're like, I don't get why he's doing this. That's where we are, right? I don't understand. Like, he has a good life. Like, we love him. Why is he acting this way? And when we're in that place, that's kind of where parents are coming to me, right?
Right. Well, especially because when we're looking for the why, oftentimes we're looking at it from a logical place, right? We're looking at it from our fully developed, fully mature adult brain. And we're looking at it from that higher functioning of logic and practicality. And toddlers' behavior, especially young children, toddlers, their behavior is not motivated by logic and practicality. It's motivated by feelings, emotions, needs. And so if we're looking, trying to explain it from a logical place, we're going to be banging our heads against the wall because we're never going to really get there. And so I always tell parents that we want to remember that there's feelings, emotions, and needs that are driving this behavior and largely, you know, developmental needs, especially in the toddler years. And we don't always have to know exactly what the feeling, emotion, or need is, but just knowing that it's present there and that's what's driving the behavior is enough for us to help shift it, to help a child in those moments. And usually we're not going to get very far with a logical why.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. Well, as we're starting to wrap up here, we could go on. There's so many more things we could talk about, and we'll have to come back next time to talk more about raising little boys. But as we go to wrap up here, you know, there's parents and caregivers, I'm sure, that are listening that are thinking, okay, so I'm ready to create a shift in how I am parenting my little boy, and really want to create space to nurture his emotional intelligence. What's one action step they can take today when they're done listening to this?
There are so many. I was going to say one thing, but I'm thinking about a couple that I was working with yesterday who are just, they're so worried about their little guy. He's five and this little sweet boy, and he does so well out in the world, but he's really, really struggling at home, like huge upsets. And when he doesn't get his way, like really coming at his parents physically, like hitting and kicking or at his baby brother and that kind of a thing. And so the overall arching answer is to focus on connection. But I want to come back to that in a second, because even before that, I was talking to them yesterday and realizing that even before that, or maybe at the same time, they need to focus on shifting their energy. Because when we come to our boys with this energy of worry, it doesn't really matter what we do. They sense that we're worried about them. Nothing works. So one place to start could be to spend some time noticing when things are going well with him. Because when our boys are struggling, we tend to focus on just those moments. So one thing that you could do to start would be to take, you know, a day or two or a week and just kind of jot down for yourself. Oh, look, he shared his Legos with his brother. Oh, look, he really was really fun at dinner tonight. Like, he didn't throw his plate on the floor or whatever. And sort of put together a library, if you will, for yourself of these moments, so that you're reminded that it's not all horrible, that it's easier for you to remember that he's good, that there's that sweet boy underneath those behaviors. And then for the connection piece, I absolutely promote a regular practice of special time that we teach about in the book Listen. And also, I don't know if it is, do you want me to talk about my freebie? Because this,
sure,
is, this is actually what it's for, is a first step for parents to act to guide you into the practice of special time, which is just a really unique kind of one-on-one time with your child. I mean, it could be with any child, doesn't have to be a boy. And we're looking at naming it something, whether it be special time, or you could call it whatever you want. I've got parents all over the world who call it things in all different kinds of languages. It doesn't matter what, but we do want to call it something because, well, for a lot of reasons, but the funnest reason is because really quick, your kids catch on that it's a really great way to connect and that they feel better after they get that time with you. So they'll start asking for it, and they need the language to be able to ask for it. So it's named, it's timed, because oftentimes, well, they're leading. So it's the child gets to do whatever they want during this time. I should have started with that, right? And so oftentimes a toddler will choose something that we might not like to do so much, right? Or maybe we're embarrassed by it, or maybe we feel uncomfortable with it because it's wasteful, or it goes against something that we are sort of feel like we stand for. And so the timer helps us to stay loving and patient through that special time. So it could be, you know, 5 or 10 minutes to start with. And if your child is struggling, like, I'm not going to lie, you don't have to do it a ton, but if you've got a boy who's struggling, especially with aggression, like, yes, it would be great if you could do it every day, even if it's just for 5 or 10 minutes, to rebuild that connection. Because not only does it help the child feel loved, it helps you remember that you actually like your kid. Because of course, yes, we love our children. But when our children are struggling in these kinds of ways, we often feel like we don't like them very much. And this will bring you back to a place of, oh, I love my sweet boy. And that's that energy, like I said, is really important to be able to transform the challenging behaviors. So that connection and special time and my 10-day reconnect, which is, I don't want you to feel overwhelmed by 10 days. Honestly, I'm very honest. So I'm not going to give you like a cheat sheet with like 3 things to say, because I want you to have success. And if you've got a little boy who's struggling, you're going to have to put in the time. So if you give me 15 minutes of your time for 10 days, I promise you there will be change in the relationship and change in the behaviors.
That is awesome. Thank you so much for offering that to our audience. And where can everyone just go to learn more?
You go to my website, parentingboyspeacefully.com.
All right. Awesome. And thank you so much for being here today, for sharing your passion for raising little boys and really all of your knowledge and wisdom with us. I really appreciate you and the work that you're doing in the world.
Thank you. I feel honored to be here and you know, back at you. So appreciative of you pulling together all these great thinkers to support parents on their journey, because parenting is hard work.
It is. It's challenging. Thank you. Thank you so much. And to everyone watching, we're so happy you're here with us today, and we'll see you again soon. Okay. Bye.